All right, joining us now, he is the CEO of the San Francisco Giants. That is Larry Bear. Larry, how are you?
Hey, Larry.
Hi, how are you? Fun Sunday. 5 o'clock games have their own special nature to them.
Yeah, and especially I like the matchup of Syndergaard and Samardzija. It's a New York team that's here. They're sort of their back is against the wall a little bit. And we're getting ready for 39 to go pennant race baseball. I think that flavor is in the park tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with the last couple of nights, it's really you've really felt it. It's yesterday as well. Everybody's sort of revving up. You know, you do go through cycles in baseball, and you talk about it a lot. I mean, you have the opening of the season. Everybody's very excited. And then you kind of see how to assess how the team's doing. Hopefully you have a contender. And then I have to say there are inevitable lulls and funks for teams. And we hopefully have come out of our inevitable funk. We've had them really the 3 years we won the World Series. We had them in various degrees.
Larry Bear here with us, Patrick Connor, Marty Lurie. Hey, Larry, I haven't had a chance to talk to you in a long time, but I just say, Matt Duffy, were you surprised at the reaction from the fan base on Matt Duffy's trade?
No, not at all, Pecan. I mean, the reaction from the fan base is the same as my reaction, in the sense that, you know, it was probably the toughest. It was very sort of unusual for us and not typical for us to trade a homegrown player. If you look at the list, there's about 20 guys that we've over the last few years that we've groomed and grown and held on to through the cycle. This is really the first one that like this that we've traded, and the temptation that was too alluring to pass up was to get a pitcher that we felt that our scouts and Bobby and Brian and everybody felt that would be a difference maker for us, not just this year but over the next 3 years going forward. And if you look at the ability to get starting pitching in next free agent offseason and going forward, very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. So that was the rationale. And look, Matt, we've all seen Matt's work ethic, Matt Moore, and we think he will fill that role. But Matt Duffy is a guy that we love. I mean, in fact, I was had a long conversation with him about an hour after the trade. And it was really difficult. And difficult in the sense that emotionally for me, because I grew to love him, even though Matt was only here a couple of years, grew to love him. Great, great, great guy. And you realize that it's the tough part, toughest part of the business. He said to me at the end of the conversation, save a ring for me.
Very good. Did he say, I want to come back? I hope.
Well, it's too early for that. But you know, it's the toughest thing you've got is making trades. You know, we saw how we were going. I think Bobby Bryan and the group, Jeremy, Dick Tidrow, you know, they really want to make sure that we have the right mix going into August, September, and postseason. And they felt another starting pitcher who very well scouted. Matt Moore was very well scouted. They all saw his game against the Dodgers in 2 weeks before the deadline, week before the deadline. And they felt that it was going to help us get to another championship.
Well, you're a long time, Larry Bear is with us. You're a long time Giants fan, long time baseball fan. Here we are, 39 to go, a dead heat with the Dodgers. Could anything be better?
I have to say, Marty, and so many people in our world talk about it, and it's fun to just real fun to talk about. I mean, it was the '60s, right? It was
right.
Mays, McCovey, Marichal, and Colfax, Drysdale, and Maury Wills, and take it through the '60s, '70s, '80s, '90s. It seems like you have occasional dips, but the Giants-Dodger rivalry really, really has stayed strong since they moved from New York, and we know what it was like in New York. And now to have these last few years where the Giants and Dodgers battle it out, often the Dodgers may come out on top in the division, which we hope does not happen this year. But even the years that has happened, that we've been in the playoffs, we've been able to end up winning through the playoffs. So it's a fight. We want to win the division. The way the system is, your odds are a lot better if you do win the division. So we're fighting to win the division.
All right. I got a glimpse of you Friday night as the entourage of Tony Bennett breezed past me with all the people. But it was a big night Friday night for the unveiling of the flag. And I haven't seen it yet outside the ballpark, but tell me about it.
So, you know, it's a tradition that we wanted to start. We've been talking about it. It happens in Chicago, we've got a lot of inspiration from the way they do it in Chicago, which we think is great. We wanted to do our own version of it. But we're going to wave a flag after every Giants win at home. We wave a flag out on Willie Mays Plaza, out of the building where they have the sort of the portal there. We can go out and stand at the second floor of the Giants building. And so when people are driving by, and it's, let's say you play a day game and it's 5 o'clock, the flag's hanging, it means that the Giants won the game. And it's a heart with an SF, the Giants SF inside a heart. So it was done, it tied into Tony Bennett and the wonderful song, I Left My Heart, and it has the Giants logo. And, you know, Tony has been a part of the Giants, really, going back to first game of the new ownership group when the team did not go to Tampa. The team was saved. Tony Bennett sang that game. He sang in every postseason, 2010, 2012, and 2014, live. And as you know, we play his song after wins. So it seemed like it was the right connection for the flag to be a Tony Bennett heart, San Francisco related theme. And so the flag's out there, not out there this today right now if you look, because we didn't win yesterday's game, but we win tonight. Let's say it's a 3-hour game at about 8:05. You will see the flag flying proudly on Willie Mays Plaza.
And I'll see it at about 11:30 when I'm leaving the bunker after the post game.
That's right. And we'll leave it out for you, Marty.
Would you please? I'd like to take a look at it. Very good. All right. Larry Bear is with us. I'll have a long night tonight, I'm sure. I'd like to see you win. Hey, you're part of the Executive Council of MLB, and you and I have chatted about this in the past. Rob Manfred talked about potential changes, just floating ideas around. What's it like being on that committee right now? And I know baseball is concerned about pace of game and all sorts of things. What are some of the things you guys kick around?
Well, it's really good that I think Rob Manfred has walked in and said, look, that baseball is not broken. Baseball, I mean, we all believe baseball is tremendous sport, has tremendous appeal. Attendance is strong, especially in San Francisco. In certain cities, it's never been better. Like San Francisco, like Chicago, like Boston, but that doesn't mean the game can't get better. And I think one of the things that we all sort of take a step back, baseball hasn't had a significant rule change since 1973, since the DH. So, and that's one, frankly, my opinion, it's, you know, that was a change that should not have been made. I'm not a big fan of the DH, that's just our personal opinion here, but other sports like the NBA and the NFL have made rule changes, whether it's the three-point line in the NBA or new rules on the way to protect passers in the NFL. And so we should just look at ways to make the game better. Part of it is to make the game, the pace better. A 4 or 5 hour game is fine if it's 23 innings or it just lends itself to that. It's a 17 to 16 game or something. But I think we all know what we're talking about in terms of moving the pace along. So that's one of the items, not the only item. But we're not saying that the game is broken or it's not working. We're just saying that, you know, let's look for ways to improve it.
Anything realistic? I mean, a pace of game, of course, a clock and getting the pitcher to throw the ball to the batter. Those things are easy.
Yeah.
But when you start talking about taking away shifts or so many relievers could be used in a game, that does fundamentally change the game.
That's right. Now, I don't think there's a real move, at least not now, without hearing any well-thought-out plans to eliminate the game on the field, eliminate the strategy of the game on the field. So I personally would not be in favor of changing shifts, I mean, prohibiting shifts or requiring, you know, defensive setups in a certain range of the park only. I mean, I think that's part of the fun of the game is to see a guy shifted on, and, you know, certain times there'll be bunts and other plays that'll go against the shift. But I think that there, as we've seen with replay, there's more enhancements. I think certainly in the short term, we're talking about, you know, making pitchers pitch and making batters stay in the box and doing some things to just improve the pace that way. More dramatic changes, I think, will be studied. I'm on a committee where we're going to study some things. We're going to do some research with the fans to see what they want in the game. But you're not going to see. I mean, it's not like we're looking to change 60 feet 6 inches, 90 feet between the bases, or, you know, three outs to an inning. I mean, it's not. Those aren't the kinds of changes that are going to be looked at.
Larry, Marty and I were talking to Barry Bloom, senior writer, MLB.com earlier, and he was suggesting more teams in the wild card, more teams in the playoffs. And And Marty, of course, countered with you'd have to reduce it. The games would end up in November. How do you handle that? Back to 154 games. And my thought is, boy, I wouldn't want to give back 5% of my paycheck. What say you?
Well, I think, Pecan, I think we have to take a look at the schedule in general. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some discrepancies and some ways the schedule doesn't work. I mean, I tell you, you or I or Marty, I don't know if you've done this, but fly around with the team at some time and live on the schedule that the players live on. And you know what that schedule is like? You're landing. I went on the San Diego LA. I'm sorry, the San Diego Boston New York trip. And I think there were like 3-4 a.m. arrivals, 5 a.m. arrivals. So I think you got to look at the schedule and whether it's going from 162 to 154, or it's changing the division alignments slightly. But but this travel where the players, that you're asking for peak performance of a player that lands at 5 a.m. and is back at the ballpark at noon or 1 o'clock the next day to do his pregame for a night game, I mean, it's just not it's not right. And I think actually that we're in a collective bargaining zone here where we're going to have a new agreement coming. I think the owners and the players sort of are in agreement on it that it needs to be improved. And so I think and the only way you're really going to do that is through the schedule. I mean, you got to change the schedule somehow, or the alignment of teams and divisions, and there's some ideas floating around that everybody's working on.
Well, 154 and a couple of doubleheaders will do the trick for me, and I think that you'd open up.
You can do that. Or the other thing, Marty, is you have one. Right now, we're playing 162 and 183 days, right?
Yep.
So maybe you do 162 and 190 days. Now, if you do that, then you're going to probably shorten spring training. And I know how much you guys love being down in Scottsdale. We all do. But does that work? Well, maybe that's a little better. Doubleheaders are something you have to obviously bargain with the union over. I personally like doubleheaders, but they're not easy to pull off in some respects. If you're moving to a day-night doubleheader. But I think that it's got to be addressed.
Larry, I would just say this. It seemed a little unfair to have those back-to-back East Coast road trips. So my question to you is, how many miles will this team travel this year?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know the exact number, but it does many. Our miles, Seattle's miles, Dodgers, Padres, we're all at the top. If you're in the Midwest and you're a team, it is a dramatic difference in travel burden. Dramatic. So if you're a Chicago team, and look, this isn't an excuse. I mean, we've won with playing in San Francisco, and it's not an excuse. It's just that you got a situation where, let's say you play a Sunday at home, and then you have a Tuesday, you open on the road in the East on a Tuesday. You can fly after the home game and get in at 5 a.m., or you can use your off day, quote-unquote off day, as a full day of travel on Monday. And those are not great choices for a player that gets very few off days to then have to use his off day to just basically be on a plane all day.
Boy, I agree. Well, good information, good stuff. And I know you're heading down to the Dominican Republic very quickly. What's cooking down there?
Well, we're really excited. The Giants are having opening a baseball academy. And so our group, Jeremy Shelley and Dick Tidrow and, of course, Bobby and Brian and Jack Baer, have done a great job putting together an academy that's going to be state-of-the-art, that's going to focus not just on, obviously, training players that could be future Giants, but also some of the life skill lessons where we're going to have classrooms and we're going to have curricula and we're going to have the ability to really take these players. And as you know, international players can be drafted at 16, so it's much younger than the American draft through the amateur draft. And so the players that we signed at the Dominican are young. They're in the middle of high school, and they really need. We really feel we need more than just train them as baseball players. We need to train them as people, and provide them the lessons. So we're opening an academy that's going to be named in honor of Felipe Alou and the Alou family, which we're very proud to do. And as you know, Felipe and his family and his brothers, and entire family, his son Moises, are super, super well-respected, as they should be in that country.
Well, Felipe, in my opinion, he wasn't the first Latin American player to play, but he is sort of the Jackie Robinson to me. of fighting for the Latin American players, Bill of Rights, and things like that. So I'm glad that Felipe gets that honor. Larry, thanks so much.
And you see him around, right, Marty? I mean, he still works for the Giants, and he makes a number of our home stands here.
I learned so much from him. He and I got to see Arnold Hayno, who wrote for Old Sport magazine and wrote that book, wrote the story about the Latin American player's Bill of Rights, which is a great story, still timely today.
Yeah.
But Felipe is terrific. Hey, have a great trip, and I know you'll miss the Dodgers series, but I'm sure you'll stay up on it.
We with the way it works with online connection and everything, there's a way you could be anywhere in the world and tap into it.
Very good. Hey, have a great time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Pete.
All right, very good. That's Larry Bear, CEO. A lot of information.
Yeah, solid. And by the way, Larry can Skype Bruce Bochy if he wants from the Dominican Republic.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he can Periscope, for crying any sake.